Hablemos del servicio telefónico. ¿Por qué todas estas compañías actúan como si ellas mandaran? Contratos raros, precios turbios, cargos escondidos. Acaba con eso. Descarga Text Now. Llamadas ilimitadas, mensajes de texto ilimitados y agregas datos cuando tú decidas que lo necesitas. 5G a nivel nacional. Las mismas torres, sin sorpresas en la factura, sin contrato fijo. Descarga Text Now y mantén tu dinero donde debe estar. Contigo. Llamadas y mensajes de texto gratis a través de la app Text Now. Requiere conexión Wi-Fi o de datos. Los planes de datos se venden por separado. 5G donde esté disponible.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This summer, whatever you're watching, baseball, golf, soccer, racing, DraftKings has you covered for every single moment of it. The DraftKings Sports app is now available in all 50 states, bringing the game straight to your fingertips wherever you are. New DraftKings customers, sign up with code KSR, spend $5 to get $150 in rewards within 14 days. Includes all markets. That's code KSR. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Bet with DK Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-MY-RESET. Connecticut? Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas, bet tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 plus, void in Canada. Event contract trading with DraftKings predictions involves risk of loss. Availability varies. Predictions offer void in New York. Bet to get bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Trade to get prediction dollars that expire in 1 year. $50 in rewards issued every 7 days via click to claim for 14 days. One non-withdrawable reward redeemable. Terms at dkng.co/offer. Limited time offer.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
Tell Steve to bring the jury.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
After I call in the jury, this is on the record again. Don't go to me. After I call in the jury, I'm taking a bathroom break, and we're probably taking a break for a good 20 minutes or half an hour, even. Okay. Just want to settle.
Are you bringing him in right now?
Yes, he's calling him in.
Okay.
Seated, we're on the record. Jury, thank you for coming in. I'm going to recess you for the day. I'm sorry. Trials are fluid. It's not something we predicted. Okay. So if you all can return at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Monday.
It's been a longer week than usual. Okay. So, Monday, okay? So have a great weekend. Please don't talk among yourselves or anyone else about the evidence received here in court. Don't read any accounts. Don't do any research. Don't go on Google, et cetera, okay? Thank you so much for your patience. Appreciate it.
I'll rise for the jury. What did you say?
Thank you. We're still on the record. Ms. Popple, gather this while we're on break.
We're just going to photograph it as she...
All right. And then can she gather it on break?
Sure.
She needs to stay in the courthouse or be close by. Okay, thank you. We are in recess. We're not... Where's everybody? All right. Call another witness. We're in the motion hearing.
Detective Hancock.
I can do that after Detective Hancock.
What?
We may approach very quickly.
Yes.
Having conferred and looked at the evidence, it is the perspective of the special prosecutor as an arm of the public that all of the issues related to the defendant's motion should be heard by the court and they should be seen by the public. This is a public issue and a record should be made. And we are here to do that.
It's Ms. Hancock.
Actually, the first witness that I intend to call is Mr. Kenny. Do you want me to take the testimony and then? I mean, it's your motion, so that's why I'm asking.
But it's your witness. Well, who wants
sure.
to do what?
That's fine, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Kenny.
I think this Corporal Hancock, if it's a hearing, can she not be sequestered?
Sure, she can sit outside.
Okay. Raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, have a seat. Talk into the microphone.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Please go ahead and state your name for the record.
Seth Kenny.
Mr. Kenny, what do you do for a living?
I am the owner of a company that provides props to a number of feature films, as well as episodics, TV, including firearms, tactical gear, leather.
Hang on just a second. Okay.
Okay. Move
it a little closer to you. You provide ammunition and firearms as a part of the props that you provide, is that right?
Well, not ammunition, because again, legally and technically,
I'm sorry.
Blanks and dummy rounds.
Blanks and dummy rounds,
correct.
Okay, thank you. Sir, do you know a gentleman by the name of Thel Reed?
I do.
How do you know him?
I met Thel approximately 12 years ago, possibly even 12 to 14. He was opposite.
How do you know him? I don't need his history.
He's a work friend.
How long have you known him?
Of him, 12 to 14 years, and more like friends, approximately 5 to 7.
Okay. And do you know a gentleman by the name of Troy Teske?
I do.
How do you know him?
He is a friend of Thales, and we used to spend time together at his house or meeting at restaurants and things in Bullhead City.
And just for the record, what does Thel Reed do for a living?
Thel Reed is a bit of a legend, gun coach and armor to the film industry for going on 60 years.
And does he have a daughter?
He does.
Who is his daughter?
Hannah Gutierrez Reed.
And do you know her?
I do.
Have you met her?
I have.
Mr. Kenny, can you explain, were you ever asked to do any training for the set of the television series 1883?
Not training myself, no, but props, firearms, leather holsters, dummy rounds, blanks.
Those were items that you were providing to the set of 1883?
Correct.
As a prop house? You
yes.
own a prop house?
Yes, and that's specific to the set.
So, if you know, was Mr. Reed asked to do anything relating to 1883?
He was. He was actually hired to be a gun coach and
What does a gun coach do?
Well, gun coach.
We don't do this for a living.
Yeah. Gun coach would teach the actors that aren't familiar with things like the 1873 lever action period weapons how to operate them smoothly and consistent with the character as called out by the script.
So, did you and Mr. Reed go to Texas for any reason for 1883?
Yeah, we did all of our filming when we were involved with the project physically. Personally, was done in Texas.
Were you asked to do a cowboy training camp?
We were asked, Thale and I were asked to be there.
To do what?
And Thale was charged with training of the actors. I was charged with bringing, specific to the training camp, some of the live reload ammunition that Thale had.
And why was live reload ammunition being taken to Texas?
Well, it was just for actor training, to give them a sense of the recoil of the guns, and it was done on a private range away from set.
Were you present when the actors were shooting the live rounds?
I was.
And was Mr. Reed there with you?
He was. For the most part, he was in the Sprinter van with the AC running because it was an August, Texas summer day.
So did you take live rounds from, did you take live rounds to the cowboy training camp?
Yes, from, yes.
And where did those live, who provided those live rounds? Did you provide them? Did Thale provide them?
Thale provided the live rounds, and we met in Albuquerque. And at that point, he loaded up his luggage and everything he needed for a couple of months.
When you say you met in Albuquerque, how did he get to Albuquerque?
He and Hannah, his daughter, drove out together. We met in Albuquerque, prepped her out for the Nick Cage movie.
And just for the record, where did they drive from?
They both drove from Bullhead City, Arizona.
Oh, thank you. So they came to Albuquerque, and did they have the live ammunition with them?
They did.
And where did y'all go from there?
She loaded up and left to Livingston, Montana to work the Nick Cage movie. And Thale and I loaded up the Sprinter with everything we needed, and we headed straight to Texas.
And did you take that live ammunition with you to Texas?
We did.
And did the actors get to have their training camp?
They did.
And was there any ammunition left over?
There was.
Where did it go?
It stayed in Texas for an undetermined amount of time. I could never figure out when it came back to my shop.
With who? When you say it stayed in Texas, did it sit by itself?
It was with the prop master for the day of the show up at the shooting range, up at the firing line. And from there, it came back into the Sprinter van, my Sprinter van, and then at one point or another, it made it back into the hotel room. And I lost track of it once it was in the hotel room. And from there, when it got loaded back into the Sprinter van and came back to Albuquerque.
So, but it doesn't come back to Albuquerque by itself. So tell us how it gets from the cowboy training camp to Albuquerque.
Well, it's driven back.
By who?
By myself.
Okay. So how is it packaged? What kind of a container is it in?
All the live ammunition from the cowboy training camp was in a typical household gray bin, approximately 2 feet long, 16 inches tall, about the same width. And it stayed in there and was packaged within each caliber individually within smaller boxes that typically held about 50 rounds.
Do you have any idea approximately how many rounds were taken to Texas?
Yeah, I know exactly. It was 325 rounds.
How do you know exactly?
Well, it was a guess of Thale's that there was between 200 and 300, and they were loosely combined in a small military green ammo can. And when I opened up that bin in Texas at the firing range for the first time, I had brought along 10 boxes, white plain boxes with styrofoam inserts that held 50 rounds each. So I populated those boxes, and then it took a picture of it, of those boxes. And one of the boxes is dog-eared, means it's partial, and coincidentally, it held exactly 25 rounds.
In case I missed it, how many rounds came back to New Mexico?
Between 50 and 100.
And when they came back to New Mexico, where did they go?
They went, because I was running low on space, they went into the bathroom.
Were they in the green can?
No. Once they had been populated into the small white boxes, the green ammo can went to the firing line, and it was being used for the spent shells, for the spent cases of fired brass.
So how were they kept at PDQ?
They were kept in that same green or gray, excuse me, gray bin, large household typical gray bin, and within the same boxes that they had populated or gotten populated into. At the Texas firing line.
So I'm going to show you what has been previously entered into evidence as Defendant's Exhibit A21. Do you recognize that?
I do.
What is that?
That is that gray, typical household bin marked live ammo 1883.
Sir, I want to be clear with you. After this came back to Albuquerque and was at PDQ Props, did you then become involved in providing props and ammunition to the set of Rust?
Can you ask that again, please?
Did you provide props and ammunition to the set of the movie Rust?
I did.
Or was that after you brought these back from Texas?
I do not know. I do not know when this bin came back to Albuquerque from Texas.
You drove it back yourself?
I did, but I did a few trips.
You don't remember the day that you brought it back?
Correct.
Okay.
It could have been before the shooting, could have been after the shooting.
Understood. In terms of boxes of dummy rounds, how many boxes of dummy rounds did you provide to the set of Rust?
A single box of 50, 45 Colt dummy rounds. That was the single box. The rest of them were of different calibers and were not contained in similar boxes.
So you provided one box of dummy rounds?
That's correct.
Where did you get this?
Those came off the set, off the prop truck of 1883.
And did you inventory them or do anything with them before you provided them to the set of Rust?
Yes, there was, I essentially grabbed a double grocery bag and dummies because I knew they were running short, or I'd heard that they were running short on set. And I thought, well, just in case, I'll grab some extra for them. And so from that plastic bag, the following morning, because again, I had to sleep in the van because there was hundreds of thousands of dollars of weapons, and it's Albuquerque. So I slept in the van, armed, and the next morning brought that bag and brought them into the office and took a look at them. They were unusual in that they had been antiqued. They were one of a couple of thousand that had been antiqued en masse. And they were so corroded, they didn't look right at all. So I sat there, and each one took about a minute to polish before it had an appropriate patina. And I also noted that a few of them had a muddy rattle to them, and I just attributed to whatever liquid chemical agent that they had soaked the rounds in had infiltrated the interior of the case. And again, not a metallurgist, but had done something to the number two lead shot, a single piece that served as a rattle to differentiate live from dummies.
Okay, stand by. I'm just looking for some exhibits. We've got a lot right now, so I need to flip through for a second. The dummy rounds that you provided to the set of Rust, did you personally ensure that they were all inert?
Absolutely.
And was the box full when you provided it to Rust?
It was. It was 50 rounds in a individually inserted into styrofoam. Each housing, each section. So it's essentially a five row wide, 10 row deep styrofoam insert that holds the rounds separately from each other, and then is inserted into a small white enclosing box, cardboard box.
And when you provided them to the set of Rust, how did they get there? Did you drive there yourself?
Sarah Zachary, the prop master of Rust, came by my office and brought a gun that they were having trouble with, reassembling that gun after it was being cleaned. So I quickly put that back together, met with her, chatted, and gave her the dummy rounds.
And is that the only box that you provided?
Yes.
Did anything from this box that we have here, or this container, Defendant's Exhibit A21, was any of that sent to the set of Rust?
Absolutely not.
Let me ask you, did you also supply props and ammunition to the set of a movie called The Old Way?
No ammunition. Blanks and dummy rounds, yes.
And do you know who the armorer was on the set of The Old Way?
Hannah Gutierrez-Reed.
And you indicated that you didn't supply ammunition. Do you know if dummy rounds were used on the set of The Old Way?
They were. Dummy rounds were used.
And where did those dummy rounds come from if you didn't provide them?
They came from Thale Reed.
How do you know that?
Because I witnessed them packing up her car and assembling all the blanks and dummy rounds that she was going to need.
So, did Hannah stay in touch with you when she was working as the armorer on the set of The Old Way?
Loosely, yes.
Did you receive any communications from her regarding the use of live rounds in the prop gun?
She did. She did reach out to me.
How? Text? Call?
Both. She called on one particular day because she had been looking for 5.45 Colt ammunition, live ammunition to shoot.
How did you know that?
Because she asked me at the office. And I thought it was odd because Thale had live ammunition and you know, why was he not giving his daughter any? I found it peculiar. So at one point in her travels from Albuquerque to Livingston, Montana, she stops along the way and stays with friends in Denver, Colorado. And at one point between Denver, Colorado and Livingston, Montana on her travels, she called me and told me she finally had found live ammunition, 45.
So once she makes it to Montana, does she contact you about shooting live ammunition out of the prop guns?
She does. She texts me this time and she asks if she can shoot live ammunition out of the set guns.
Well, how did you respond?
I said absolutely not, and it's a big mistake, and I even said it always ends in tears.
And did you have any additional communications with her about live rounds after that?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So after you take your box of dummy rounds and you give it to Sarah Zachary, do you ever see it again?
Only in the evidence photos.
Okay, so let's look at those. Defendant's Exhibit A27, previously entered into evidence. Do you see that?
I do.
And do you know what we're looking at here?
I do.
Describe to us what we're looking at.
Well, these are these antiqued rounds that came off the set of 1883, actually more specifically the prop truck of 1883. And you can see that they're heavily aged. And this is after each one has been polished with Quad-O steel wool for about a minute.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, okay.
What about this one? Does this one look different?
Yeah, absolutely. The case is way too bright. It looks nearly new, and that is an anomaly. I do not believe that came from me because all the rounds were heavily, heavily aged.
Okay. I'm going to show you what is entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 30. Do you see that?
I do.
What is that a photo of?
It looks to be the same antique rounds, dummy rounds that I provided Rust.
Okay. So you provide these to the set of Rust, and obviously there's an incident in Ms. Hutchins' dies. Do you then reach out to law enforcement and begin communicating with law enforcement?
I do.
Why?
Well, I think they wanted access to the guns that were on the prop truck near the set of Rust, and there was some text message discussions regarding that. I offered to open the safe.
Why did you have a combination to the safe on the set of Rust?
I actually didn't until I think the day that I met former Detective Hancock at the prop truck, the day that they executed the warrant. I didn't actually have the combination until Sarah Zachary gave it to me.
So Ms. Zachary gave you the combination and you were able to open the safe?
I didn't actually physically open it myself. I never went onto the prop truck. Just passed along
to... Okay, what did you do then?
Well, I met off to the side with Detective Hancock at the time, and at one point Sarah Zachary was there as well while they were searching the prop truck, and as well as opening starting to pull guns out of the safe.
Okay. Do you recall having a conversation with Detective Hancock where you asked Mr. Teske to provide information about rounds?
I do.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was one of two or three times that I went up to the sheriff's department to provide evidence or something that I thought might be of value to the investigation. And upon one of those visits, we were in the interview room and I was just trying to figure out where these live rounds could have come from. And I thought possibly Troy Teske might have something that was similar. And so I called him while we were in the interview room, and I believe it was being recorded with Detective Hancock right there. And we started the dialogue. And at that point, it went into a text exchange with pictures as well, with at least one picture.
I haven't had an opportunity to mark this as evidence, but I'd like to. I only have a digital copy of it, but I intend to use this with the witness. This is, as an offer of proof, Your Honor, this is a copy of the text message between Mr. Teske and Mr. Kinney. So I'd like to just go ahead and display it, and we can I can mark it and provide it to the court. I just don't have a paper copy of it. Do you need to see it?
No, I know what this document is.
Okay, let's go.
What is it going to be? Actually, this is a separate motion hearing, so when I marked that the supplemental is Courts 13, I think I should have marked it separately in it. As courts one
okay.
For the motion hearing. And then while we're here, I have not marked those, so those are courts two.
These right, the, yeah. The ammunition?
Yes.
Okay. So what do you want me to mark this exhibit that I'm gonna use with Mr. Kinney?
Well, now you're gonna have to, well, let me do this. Let me make this courts Roman numeral one and courts Roman numeral two, and then you can keep your ones and he can keep his alphabet. You can keep your numerics.
I should just continue with exhibit, the next exhibit.
No, because we're in a motion hearing.
Right.
Now,
so just, we'll call this state's exhibit one.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Now, you also introduced some other evidence, which you can refer, you don't have to reintroduce it. We'll just identify it as like 27 from the trial. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Can you mark this, can you mark that for me, courts two, Roman numeral two?
Is there a reason I'm not seeing this on the monitors? Oh, sorry, but I missed that. Yeah.
Okay, well, he's doing this first.
So okay, sure.
Yeah, right there, right on top. Thank you. Okay.
Do you see what's in front of you, sir?
Video.
Is this what tell us what we're looking at here and if you can and what we're looking at is going to be State's Exhibit 1 for the motion hearing. I'm enlarging it and I'll move it away again. Can you see the date?
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
What is it?
November 1, 2021.
So tell us what we're looking at. What were the circumstances of this?
This is once I had called Troy Teske in the interview room at the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office with Detective Hancock present. He was somewhere out and about, and he said he would be home in about 5 minutes or so. And at that point, I asked him if he had any of the reloads that Thale had owned for a number of years that a common friend of ours had manufactured for him. And I asked for samples.
Hang on. Why would Troy Teske have Thale Reed's ammunition?
Troy used to store Thale's guns and ammunition for him at his home.
Okay, so you asked Troy if he has any of the leftover reloads.
Correct.
And so is what we're looking at, the leftover reloads that you're asking about, did they go to 1883?
They're the same reloads, but they never cross paths once Thale leaves Bullhead City with the ammo can of 325, that are those reloads. These reloads are some of the ones that Thale left along with his guns for Troy Teske to store.
So these never went to the set of 1883?
Absolutely not. Definitely not a set.
Okay, whatever. The
cowboy
training camp.
Yeah.
And they did they ever go to you?
No.
Because they never went to you, were you ever able to intentionally or mistakenly provide them to the set of Rust?
Definitely not. And they're not even, the brass primers are a dead giveaway for that which was not on Rust.
And you bring me to my next question. Are you familiar with the way that the live rounds found on the set of Rust look?
I am.
Do they look like these?
No.
So let's look at the text exchange here at the bottom. Who's communicating?
My text is in green, and Troy's is on the left side in black and white.
So what does Troy say?
Excuse me. Glasses are horrible. Sorry about this. Yeah, thank you. Just below the picture, Troy writes, I checked a bunch of the rounds. These are the four different types that I could find. And I reply, yep, it's evidence in the accidental death.
And hang on, we're going to stop there. Why did you think this was evidence in the accidental death?
Well, I think at that point, without having seen the evidence photos and knowing, the only thing I did see was Detective Hancock shared with me a black and white 8.5 by 11 piece of paper with some
with some pictures on it, and I saw Starline Brass, and it was, and, you know, it was the nickel primer Starline Brass case, and I hadn't really connected the dots that the gentleman that loaded these hasn't had nickel primers in 10, 12 years.
How do you know that?
Well, he says he only used Winchester primers.
No. Did you speak to him?
Yes,
how do you
yes,
know
I
that?
Yes, I did. Okay. Right after Hancock and I got done with this meeting, I called him because it dawned on me that it seemed unlikely that there would be two different color primers. And so I called the gentleman and I asked him, at what point, if you
what
made...
What gentleman? Don't use the word gentleman. We need names.
Joe Swanson.
Okay.
Okay. So I called Joe Swanson. I asked him, at what point, you know, if he remembered making the reloads for Thale, which he did, I asked him which powders he might have used. And he gave me two options, and one of which was Trail Boss powder. And I asked him, I said, well, at what point would you switch between brass and nickel primers? And he said, I wouldn't. And I said, well, why? He said, well, because Winchester stopped making them 10, 12 years ago.
Not making what?
Nickel primers.
Okay.
So he only, if we look at all the evidence photos of all the blanks that Joe Swanson makes, you will not see a nickel primer in any of those blank rounds for the same reason.
So you indicated to Mr. Teske on November 1st, 2021, this is evidence in the accidental death. And you're talking about this photograph.
I am. And, well, the rounds. So
the rounds in the photograph.
Yes.
Have you learned a few things about the evidence in the case and the live rounds that were found on Russ since November 1st of 2021?
Yes.
Do you still believe that these are evidence in the accidental death?
Definitely not.
And then I see Mr. Teske responds and says, okay, and then what do you say?
Can you zoom in? Thank you.
Let me see. There you go.
I reply, ugh, this sucks, but she's seriously trying to blame everyone else for her mistake.
What does he say?
He replies, who is she, Hannah? Question mark. And I reply, Hannah.
And then you ask an important question. Read that to us.
Yeah, November 3rd, 2021, I ask Troy Teske in text, did you see any rounds in either box with nickel primers?
What's his response?
He replies, no.
Okay. Is that just a close-up of the same photo of the ammunition?
It is.
And you have testified that this is dissimilar. This is dissimilar to the live rounds that were on the set of Rust.
Yes, and you know, from this photo, we can only see that we have four different, you know, cases, different manufacturers of cases. The brass primers are obviously a dead giveaway. But what we don't see on the inside is that the powder is different than Rust. The actual powder itself, as well as the projectiles, are different than what was found on Rust.
So, Mr. Kinney, the ammunition that is in this can here, that's Defendant's Exhibit A21, what happened to it? Where did it go?
I'm not seeing an exhibit.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
I can't switch back and forth that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Can
yeah,
you see it?
The gray bin. Yeah, the gray bin. Yep, I see it.
What happened to the ammunition that was in this can that you brought back from Texas?
It sat in that bin in the bathroom and was...
Ultimately, when did it leave PDQ? Under what circumstances?
Oh, when the Sheriff's Department executed a search warrant on the on my business.
They took all of it?
Yes. They weren't entitled to all of it, but I just said take all of it. The warrant specified it had to be Starline Brass, and I just told them take it all.
So everything that you brought back from Texas is in the custody of the Sheriff's Department?
Correct.
Did you, at any point in time, did you ever exchange ammunition with Thale Reeder Troy Teske again after the death of Helena Hutchins?
No.
So any ammunition that would be in the possession of Mr. Teske, is that anything that you have ever had possession of?
No. I've only once received 45 Colt live ammunition from someone, and that was Thale, and that on our way headed to Texas. And I hadn't opened the can until we got to Texas.
At some point in time, Mr. Kinney, did you have reason to believe that Mr. Reed and Mr. Teske wanted to blame the introduction of the live rounds to the set of Rust on you?
To varying degrees, yes. I wasn't, Thale definitely. And later on, Troy, it seemed palpable that they were trying to point the finger at me.
Okay, let me think. Hang on just a second. I just want to make sure I'm done. How certain are you that you didn't provide any live rounds to the set of Rust?
I have provided blanks and dummy rounds and guns to over 1,000 different productions. And on average, it's 5 to 10 guns per episode, per feature film. And each gun would typically have about 10 dummy rounds with it. So that's between 50 and 100,000 dummy rounds. And I have never spent more time with a single box of dummy rounds than the rounds that came from 1883, the dummy rounds that went to Ross. So there was never a question in my mind that I provided the live ammunition to Rust.
Okay, I'll pass this witness. And Mr. Spiro, is there an exhibit that you need me to provide?
Just if you could email me that.
The text message?
Yeah.
Sure.
Present.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So in the thousands of times you've provided ammunition to movie sets that you just told me about?
Blanks and dummy rounds.
I know. I apologize.
That's
right. I'm not trying to use the word ammunition to
okay.
get you.
Gotcha.
All right. In the thousands of times you've done that, that would mean...
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Ms. Johnson's asking to approach.
Thousands of productions that you've...
1,000-ish. Not thousands.
Okay. The 1,000 productions that you've... Oh, you said over 1,000 different productions.
Mm, feature films, episodics.
Okay. 5 to 10 guns per episode per feature film.
Or an episode.
Each gun would typically have about 10 dummy rounds with it, so that's between 50 and 100,000 dummy rounds, right?
Yes, 5,000. Yeah, that's the math, yeah.
And you're telling this court that of all the dummy rounds in all the productions in all the years, these 50 were the ones that you checked the most.
They required the most time because of the antiquing and because that, again, some of them had a muddy rattle. So there was no point in providing a dummy round that had a muddy rattle to set. That's the last thing you want to have happen. And so each one had to ring clearly with the number 2 lead shot inside of it.
And of all the dummy rounds on all the sets, these ones had a muddy rattle.
No, the ones that were excluded had a muddy rattle.
I see. You provided 45 long cold dummy rounds to the set of Rust, correct?
Yes. And more specifically, through Sarah Zachary. She picked them up.
Right. And you know Sarah Zachary was at your prop house on the 12th of October, correct?
Yes.
And you came back from Albuquerque, you came back from 1883 on the 11th, at least one trip, correct?
Yeah, I arrived sometime in the middle of the night, the night of the 11th. It could have been past midnight.
You've got to put it on.
I think. Is that okay?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I know what you want.
You arrived the 11th?
Night of the 11th.
She comes the 12th?
Yes.
Shooting happens on the 21st?
Yes.
Russ needed 45 long Colt dummies?
May have needed. Knew they were running short.
Okay. They may have not needed it the most of all time, but they needed it, right?
Possibly.
You have already told this court that you had brought 45 long Colt rounds from the set of 1883, correct?
The dummy rounds from the prop truck, yes.
There were also live ammunition on 1883, correct?
No.
There was no live ammunition on the set of 1883? Not on the set of 1883, at the cowboy camp, just off the set of 1883.
Well, not even close to anything that was filming.
Okay, so not anywhere close to filming, not on the set, but at 1883's cowboy camp.
The cowboy training camp for 1883, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you brought some of those live rounds to PDQ, correct?
Yes.
The live 45 long Colt rounds to PDQ, correct?
Yes.
And you've told this court that when you brought them back, they were between 50 and 100, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you provided 45 long Colts, again, you say dummies, I get it, to Sarah Zachary, correct?
Correct.
Those were Starline brass with nickel primers, correct?
Yes.
The invoice you provided to Sarah Zachary and the set of Rust had 200 listed as the amount that you provided, correct?
I don't recall.
Do you deny it?
Sounds about right. It could be. The invoice was generated weeks after, so it was done from memory at that point.
Okay. Have you been watching any of this, Trump?
No, just the headlines, whatever comes on the news.
Okay. Do you know that on direct examination of CST Popple, that this was entered into evidence, which is States 30?
I haven't seen her at all during this trial.
Well, eventually on cross-examination, it turned out that these were, of course, the rounds provided, correct?
Except for the bright one in the lower row, in the middle, just above the two zeros that are next to each other. Well, yeah, in the evidence number, I don't believe that is a round that came from PDQ.
When you say you don't believe, you know, which I think you said in direct, is you're not certain, but you don't believe, correct?
It's 2.5 years ago. It does not appear. I'm 99.9% sure
That was not inclusive of the original styrofoam insert of 50 in the box.
Okay, so it sounds like you're not certain, but fairly certain, and it's been a long time. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. At the time, when your memory was fresher, you actually received a photograph of this, and you told Detective Hancock this, and it has a nickel primer, which is sketchy, correct?
I don't know what the photograph is. A photograph of what?
Did you, in fact, tell Detective Hancock that picture, that round, was sketchy?
I recall saying that. Or texting her, possibly texting her saying that, because it was concerning, because it didn't look like any of the antique rounds that I had provided.
Right. So at the time, years ago, when you first see this, when your memory was fresher, the word you used was sketchy, correct?
I recall that, yes.
The incident happens on the 21st of October, and at 1:55 p.m., you receive a text message from Sarah Zachary telling you that this has occurred, correct?
I think it wasn't telling me that it occurred. It just said emergency in all caps.
And you called her, right?
I did. I missed a call from her, received the text. I think I said I'd call her back, and I did.
Okay.
Within just a minute or two.
And between the time you provided, whatever it is that you provided to Russ, and the moment you get that emergency text, isn't it fair to say you're not sitting around, you know, daydreaming and wondering and thinking about each round you provided and whatever you provided to the set? You do this for a living. You do it lots of times, right?
That's correct, yeah.
But the moment that happens, right, things changed, didn't they?
What changed?
Well, Miss Hutchins died, right?
I wasn't aware of that till hours later.
You spoke to Ms. Zachary 5 times that night, right?
I don't recall. Probably.
Ms. Zachary, you know, had the shell casing, right, at one point that evening?
No. I don't recall that.
You don't recall that?
No, that she said she held the spent case from the gun. I don't recall that.
Sarah Zachary threw out some of the evidence, correct?
I had heard that months and months afterwards, that she had thrown out dummy rounds from Jensen Ackles' gun.
Months and months?
I believe so.
Sure about that?
Barely. It's been a long time.
Right. And the only messages that we have from around that time we're going to look at. But you knew at that moment that you had just provided 45 Starline brass dummies, correct? With nickel primers.
Nearly all the dummy rounds I provide are Starline brass.
And you would agree with me that anybody who did provide that round or brought it onto the set would have every reason to want to deny that, correct?
No. Hannah Gutierrez admitted in questioning at the sheriff's office that she brought the box that contained the live rounds.
No, she didn't. She actually said she hadn't seen that box, and that's just something that's been fed to you by the prosecutors, isn't that true?
No, I've actually seen the interview.
Okay, well, we can pull up that interview if we need to. So, the week after the accident, you know that we have some of your text messages, right?
Yes.
Okay, and you weren't sleeping, right?
Correct.
You were drinking a lot?
I don't even remember.
You were talking to your cop buddies to try to get advice about the case?
I don't recall that.
You texted Sarah Zachary in the days that followed, do not say anything or write anything to anyone, right?
Yes, I remember that text.
Do nothing, say nothing, write nothing, correct?
Correct.
She told you she wanted to get a lawyer, right?
Yes.
You told her not to get a lawyer, right?
Yes.
In fact, at one point you just said, shh, with an emoji, right?
I don't recall that.
Okay. You did provide Detective Hancock. Do we have that photo that was entered into evidence on the screen? Okay. Did you email that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll get it in a minute. But the one that you just saw on the screen of you and Mr. Teske, do you remember that photograph that you just looked at?
With the reloads?
Yeah.
Yes.
You actually took a screenshot of that and sent it to Detective Hancock, correct?
It sounds like something I would do. I don't recall doing it, but it sounds accurate.
Okay. Does it sound like... I don't have the photo, so. But the photo that you took and sent to, of the screenshot that you sent to Detective Hancock, it included that line. Yes, this is evidence in the accidental death, right?
That was my speculation prior to learning that the live rounds from Rust had nickel primers.
Well, sir, that's the problem with your testimony, isn't it?
Which is what?
In the very same text chain, you ask about nickel primers. So how is it possible that you didn't know about it when you said that this is evidence in the accidental death?
Because the meeting with Hancock and the text exchange with the pitcher occurred on November 1st. 2 days later, on November 3rd, I had asked by text, whether or not any of the rounds had nickel primers. And he replied, Troy Teske replied, no. And at that point, that was the reason why.
So this is, I think it's court exhibit two, perhaps, of this hearing.
This one? No. Minor Roman numeral one and two.
It's going to be states one.
States
I just
one.
Haven't had a chance to mark it.
That's fine. We'll call it states one for now. You see it on your screen?
I do.
Okay. And you see, you say, yep, it's evidence in the accidental death, correct?
That's on November 1st, yes.
Correct. That's what you wrote, sir, right?
On November 1st, yes.
Okay. And you didn't say anything about speculating, did you?
No.
Okay. But when you screenshot this to Detective Hancock, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, let me ask you, after he says, okay, you say, this sucks, but she's seriously trying to blame everyone else for her mistake, correct?
Yes, that's what it says.
Okay. So it's, this sucks, but she's trying to blame everybody else, right?
Yes.
This sucks that it comes from the same batch, but it's really her fault because she loaded into the weapon, right?
Well, first off, I pronounced that ugh. And then what was the second part of your question?
But it's her fault because she loaded into the weapon, correct?
Certainly.
And you said that over and over again as you continue to meet with law enforcement, that whatever happened here, it's her fault, she loaded it, correct?
Well, certainly she's responsible for loading a live round into a gun on a movie set.
How come when you provided the screenshot, this is defense one for the hearing, how come when you provided to the defense, how come when you provided the screenshot of the text message to Detective Hancock, you left out the, this sucks? But seriously, she's trying to blame everyone else for her mistake.
If you put that back up, I think you'll see that the digital keyboard is in the way of whatever's underneath it.
I see. And is there something with your phone where you can't take multiple screenshots and just go further down like you did 10 other times in this case?
That's a picture of a picture.
I understand that, but I'm asking you.
That's...
Why didn't you provide the message, this sucks?
I did, and what I'm saying to you is that when you take a picture of a phone with a keyboard up, it's going to block the lower half of the message.
Okay, so on November 1st, you agreed to an interview with Detective Hancock, correct?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. No other officers?
Yeah, November 1st, yeah.
No other officers were present, correct?
It was just Hancock in the interview room, correct?
And you talked about your phone call that you made with Troy Teske, right?
I did it in front of her.
No, I know. You were very, very cooperative, correct?
I thought so.
I don't think you mentioned on direct examination, but tell me if I'm wrong. You also made a phone call to Joe Swanson in front of Detective Hancock.
I don't recall it being in front of Hancock. It was as I was driving away, and it dawned on me that I kept on seeing brass and nickel, and it didn't wash with me. It didn't make sense.
Joe Swanson and the original batch of the ammunition was very much on your mind. Fair?
Of the reloads, yeah, I was fairly confident that somehow some of that reloaded ammunition came in through a piece of leather, or Hannah had been shooting, gotten hold of some of it, been shooting it, commingled it with dummy rounds. I was concerned that it was going to be a Joe Swanson reload.
It turns out you actually made the call to Joe Swanson within earshot of the police recording equipment. And you asked Mr. Swanson about the green ammo can.
I don't recall that.
Okay. And you then said... Shit. Well, she didn't do her fucking job.
Now I recall. Yes.
I bet you do, right? And the she who didn't do her fucking job was the armorer, right?
Correct.
And the shit is the commingled rounds, isn't it?
Well, I think the shit was a concern that Swanson was going to get dragged into this, and it was going to have been some of his reloads that caused the death and injury.
Oh, the exclaiming of the shit was your concern for Joe?
I think it's a collective. I mean, there's four of them there. There's a lot of shit.
So some of the shits were for everybody that had ever touched the commingled round.
Yeah, the whole thing is awful.
Okay. Can we agree that you didn't intentionally provide live ammunition to the set of Russell?
We can agree that it didn't at all.
Okay. Well, we can't actually agree to that.
Okay.
And by the way, that's November 1st. November 30th, a month later, the police come knocking with a search warrant, right?
Yes.
Just like you were there at the truck search, you were there at the PDQ warrant search, right?
I was on a connector flight from Phoenix.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Both times, both at the truck and at your the search at your prop house, both times you happened to be grabbing onto a flight and getting there just that day, right?
No, actually, I was in Las Cruces on Bruce Willis's final movie, finished that, and was heading to the Rust set directly from Las Cruces, driving in the Sprinter van.
That was after you got the code to the safe, right?
I recall that I got the code while driving.
So if law enforcement were to have represented in this courtroom that they needed you to open up the safe and that's why you were at the truck search, that's not actually true, because Sarah Zachary had the code, they had the code. That whole story about needing you there for the code is pure fiction, right?
I don't know that it's fiction. I think it was more along the lines of Hancock wanted to interview me, and also I wanted to be there to assist in any way that I could have with the investigation. So I think they're being cordial in waiting for me to show up.
Okay. Back to PDQ. The warrant was signed by a judge authorizing them to search your property, right?
I saw that, yes.
And when you saw in the warrant that it talked about the reloads in the green ammo can, you actually started to text Detective Hancock, upset with her for including that in the warrant, didn't you?
I did.
You had video surveillance at PDQ, correct?
There was, I don't recall exactly at what point the camera overrode itself.
Well, that wasn't my question. My question was just you had surveillance footage at PDQ. In fact, in the...
Yeah, but excuse me. If the footage has been overwritten, then I don't have it.
You have surveillance equipment there that records. Whether it's overwritten or not, you don't know. Is that your testimony?
I have surveillance equipment, yes.
Okay. And actually, during the search of PDQ, you were looking at your phone, because you have a remote access, trying to see the surveillance footage and what it was catching. Remember that?
I don't recall that, no.
Did you deny it?
If I was actually inside the premises?
You're inside the premises, on your phone, looking at the surveillance equipment that you have remote locked into your cell phone.
I don't recall. It's possible.
And the testimony you have given this court is at that point in time, right, there's a green ammo can there, correct?
Yes.
The same green ammo can you're calling Swanson and Teske about in front of Hancock, correct?
He sounds, yeah, roughly accurate, yes.
Right, unwritten on it was the word empty, right?
Was it? Oh, on, yeah, black ink next to the silver duct tape on top, yes.
And lo and behold, law enforcement doesn't find anything in the empty can, right?
There was tags and office supplies and other things in it.
But we know at one point there was ammunition in it, right?
The last time was in Texas.
Nothing further.
Unless the court has any questions for the witness, I don't have any.
Witness is excused. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next witness. Thank you. You swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Have a seat. Talk into the microphone.
Corporal. On November 1st of 2021, did you have a meeting with Seth Kinney?
Yes.
And what was the purpose of that meeting?
I don't know the entirety of the purpose of it, but I think it was something to do with ammunition for Rust.
And were you provided, or did Mr. Kinney share with you a photograph of ammunition?
Yes.
And do you recall the photograph?
No, I don't.
Would you recognize it if I showed it to you?
I might.
Does that look familiar?
Not entirely, no.
Okay, let me show you something else. Would it refresh your memory if you saw the text exchange between Mr. Kinney and Mr. Teske?
Yes.
Can you see that? Do you want me, I'm gonna enlarge it. Do you see the date?
I do.
I'm going to go down so you can see the rest of it. Do you see the rest of it?
Yes, I do.
Is that the photograph of the ammunition that was shared with you by Mr. Kinney that came from Mr. Teske on November 1st?
I remember this conversation between the two of them.
Okay, explain it to us then. And I'm sorry, I'm showing you for the record States Exhibit 1 for the motion hearing. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Well, tell us about the conversation.
Yes.
Tell us about this meeting. What happens?
So this was a conversation with Troy and Seth and an exchange of where the rounds that Troy may have had that could have been in relation to Rust. Right. Yeah.
So did you see this photograph on that day?
Yes.
And were you able from the photograph to determine whether or not these rounds were similar to the rounds found on the set of Rust?
These would not have been similar to what we had found on Rust.
Okay. And from this vantage point, how can you see that?
So some of them, well, a lot of them have an actual head stamp of companies or manufacturers such as Winchester, BHA. I think the other one says CBC. It's a little hard to see with the shadowing in the picture. The only one out of these that would have been somewhat similar to what we had found on Rust is the third one from the left, which shows the Starline brass logo and it says 45 Colt. However, a distinguishable difference in this round and what we had found on Rust would have been the color of the primer. They're different colors.
Okay. If you recall, did you yourself ever have a conversation with Mr. Teske?
Not where it was just me and him, but I have had a conversation with him in the conversation.
So let me ask you this. After you were provided this information, the photograph and the information about the rounds, where was your understanding of where those rounds were located?
In Arizona.
And did you have any communications with Mr. Teske about obtaining those rounds?
Yeah, I had asked Mr. Teske at least a couple times for him to figure out how to send those rounds to the sheriff's office. I asked him on a couple different occasions to either ship them or figure out a way that we could still get them in the sheriff's office possession.
And you wanted to do that even though they didn't appear to match the rounds from Rust?
Yes.
Why?
Because the investigation in itself was still very fresh at that time. It was still ongoing. I wanted to make sure that we had all the information that was brought forward to us in order to continue this investigation.
Did you see Mr. Teske at Ms. Gutierrez's trial?
I did.
And were you aware that Mr. Teske was a friend of Ms. Gutierrez's father?
Yes.
Did you receive any communications during the Gutierrez trial relating to Mr. Teske?
I did.
Tell us about those.
So during her Hannah's trial, or near the end of it, I had gotten some correspondence that a male by the name of Troy Teske had came in and had ammunition and that he wanted to turn it over.
Came in where?
To the courts.
So he came here?
Yes.
To this building?
Yes.
And who did he speak to, if you know?
He spoke to the deputies downstairs that were working the courts.
And what were you doing at that point in time?
I was here in trial.
So you receive information that there's a person down there that has what?
Ammunition.
And how did you respond? What did you do?
I had asked the deputy, I said, can you just have him wait until, have him wait here until I have a moment that I can speak with him.
Did he wait for you?
No.
Where do we go from here? What happens next?
From there, I believe we had a break. I had asked where Troy was. They said he was no longer here. And then further on into the day, I don't know if it was a call or a text message, but I had gotten word that Troy had shown up to the sheriff's office and was trying to turn over that ammunition. At that point, we're still in trial, so I have a little bit of limited time and where I need to figure out logistics with this. And I believe I had gotten a call from the lieutenant or someone there, and I said, okay, well, I'm still here, but I will make contact with him at a later point and get a statement from him so we can figure out what to do with this.
And at that point in time, were you aware that he had left some ammunition at the sheriff's department?
Yes.
And did you take steps to contact Mr. Teske to take his statement?
I did. I called him twice when I had found out that he had shown up to the sheriff's office. He didn't pick up the phone, and I never received a call back.
And let me ask you, why is it important for you to take his statement?
Because I need to figure out what to do with this ammunition and how it would potentially be tied to the case and in what way, so I can figure out what to do with it after that.
At the time that you are reaching out to him that day, do you have any idea whether or not this is related to the case?
Just by him saying it might be, but not in what context it would have been.
But you didn't speak to him?
No.
Okay. And is that the reason you were trying to reach him?
Yes, and to try to set up something where I could have a discussion or an interview with him.
And you want to have the interview because you want to see if it's tied to the case?
Yes.
So you call him twice, and does he respond?
No.
Do you continue to try to reach him?
I did try to reach him again. I believe it was the following week. I tried to reach out a couple times and never received a response back.
So if you don't have a witness who will give you an interview regarding the items that they've dropped off at the sheriff's department, how do you know that they're in any way related to the case?
I really wouldn't, because I didn't have a discussion with him.
Has Mr. Teske ever returned your calls?
No.
There's more to come in the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk. Breathe. Rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.